I have in my hands, or actually lying, it's on the table because it's an awful large book. It is the definitive illustrated story. It's called Ballet, the definitive illustrated story.
Wonderful.
Beautiful photographs. But more importantly, I think the history of ballet is displayed in such a way that even a novice or somebody who's never really understood the history of it can really embrace it and maybe get more out of seeing a future ballet performance.
Yes, absolutely. I absolutely agree with you on that. And I think that was the actual aim of the book. And we seem to have succeeded on that, yes. I mean, even for me, I'm still learning so much, especially on the, you know, the beginning of the of ballet. So interesting, you know, to learn about all the sort of characters that, you know, I might have heard on the way, but then to actually read, you know, really read about them. It's wonderful. Yeah, it's wonderful. It's very colorful, black and white photos and colorful photos. And I mean, it's a really good read, I think. It's a really good book.
And I neglected to introduce you to our audience, Vivian Durante, a former principal dancer, international ballet star with the Royal Ballet and the American Ballet Theater. I noticed in there's a quote in here from one of a choreographer, I believe, George Blanchine. It says, "I don't want people who want to dance. I want people who have to dance." Were you a person who had to dance?
Yes, I was. Absolutely, I was. I think that's exactly, he's got it absolutely to the very, you know, words is true, what he says. I think you need to have this burning sensation in you that you really, something you really kind of need to do. You can't live without, basically.
Well, it becomes a way of life in a sense. I mean, there's a lot of discipline that goes into that. Tell me just a little of your involvement. When did you first start dancing, and then how did that become a career?
Yeah, I started when I was actually really little. I started when I was 6 and a half, nearly 7, and then it sort of really took over my life to the extent that I wouldn't miss one ballet class. Even to go to like a friend's birthday party, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't miss it. For me, you know, I had to go and do that, my class. And then, of course, you know, later on, I went to the Royal Ballet School when I was 10, and then I did all the years of schooling there, and then I got to the Royal Ballet Company when I was 17. So it is like a way. It is part of your life. It's who you are, basically.
Do you do you remember the first time you were able to do an point? With those slippers and be able to sort of get up on your toes?
Go on point, yes. There are different theories about, you know, sort of trying point shoes on little girls at what kind of age and how it can be sort of at certain times can be, you know, maybe too early, it can be damaging or, you know, I in my school where I was before going to White Lodge, I put them on when I was 8. And it's a wonderful sensation for a little girl, I have to say. You kind of feel as if you're suspended. You know, you don't have the sense of gravity anymore, but you're kind of slightly suspended from the floor, which makes you kind of ethereal, which is sort of exactly perfect for classical ballet.
Looking through the book Ballet, the Definitive Illustrated Story, find different quotes, but also just images. And it reminds me of when I saw the Nutcracker in the Cleveland area here, performed a number of years ago for the ballet. What I didn't realize until halfway through is, you know, there's no talking, there's no words. It's all music and images, and there's a different way your senses have to kind of interpret everything. It kind of creates a whole different way of viewing sort of a moving piece.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's up to the artist, and I think it's up to the choreographer to you know, use the language of dance in such a way which kind of makes it sort of, you know, understood by, you know, the normal kind of audience who's coming to see ballet for the first time. I think it's, you know, kind of a huge responsibility to sort of engage the audience in such a way through the choreography that you do understand it, even though we don't have the normal way of actually communicating.
And in as much as the ballet goes through centuries, depending on the culture, I guess, and maybe even the era or what people want, it is an ever-changing art form, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's evolving all the time on reflection on what's happening in the world and keeping up with what's happening and to the rest of the world as well. And what exactly, it depends where you are, different cultures, you know, what kind of obviously do different ballets, like on reflection on what their beliefs are and how, you know, what they're doing at that moment. And I think that's what makes it kind of alive, and it makes it sort of grow, you know, every day, every season, every year, every century.
And there's a point, and I'm not sure if you fall under that in a way, where sometimes the prima ballerina becomes almost like a rock star or a cult figure over time. Those were sort of like celebrities, right?
Yes. I mean, it kind of also depends which country you're at. I mean, for instance, in Japan, I mean, they do treat ballerinas like rock stars. I mean, you are kind of somebody who they kind of really do look up to, and they sort of, you know, they see you in the street, they ask for autographs, they wait for your stage door, big crowds, and it's a wonderful way of actually living that. But also, you know, puts like a huge responsibility onto the artist, and you know how they, you know, how you kind of put yourself across to them, and how you actually sort of approach your roles and what you do when you're on the stage. And because, you know, the stage doesn't hide anything, so it's just like it comes with a huge responsibility as well.
And a lot of times your costumes don't hide much either as well. So as a dancer, you have to be in tip-top shape. It's very athletic. Talk a little bit about that and how that you have to kind of keep that discipline going.
Well, I mean, in fact, as you see in the book, you know, it was not so athletic dance. It was more of a, you know, telling of a story, and sort of like it wasn't sort of based on the athleticism of a dancer, or much more on sort of, you know, body conscious as it is now, which is in a sense is a good thing, but at the same time we must not let it just go, you know, towards that it's like you know, it is, after all, it is an art form, and it should remain an art form. We're not athletes. But, you know, there is obviously, because we do use our bodies, you know, we have to be very well trained in order to, you know, to make beautiful lines and to use, you know, the classical language in a very sort of beautiful way to tell the stories.
One of the things about ballet that I didn't realize until a couple of years ago, in a sense, was that females really didn't begin in ballet. They were not the primary dancers. There was a point where it kind of switched. Nowadays, you think of it more or less female dominated, with the occasional men or the men with those roles, but it was reversed at the start.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it was in the book, it will absolutely teach you that Jean-Baptiste Lully, who was a composer who then became sort of also sort of a dancer himself, and he used to dance, you know, for the king, and he sort of like he brings in the 17th century, he kind of brings the female role into dance, which was absolutely dominated by male, which is, you know, incredible to think of that, you know, how it sort of it is like much more female kind of orientated, even though, well, nowadays it's sort of becoming kind of much more sort of equal, but it went through a stage, it was more women, it was kind of quite difficult, like, you know, Billy Elliot's movie comes in to get, you know, boys to train as dancers, and so it's funny how kind of it all kind of waves, you know, in and out, you know, sort of how the story goes, which is really incredibly interesting, and then the book actually will show you that. Which is, you know, which is incredible to find out, you know, in a ballet book.
And you can learn about all the different classic ballets, the ones that sort of have stood this test of time, have been, you know, transferred from centuries. You work as a teacher now. Do you share your love of dance then with the students at this point?
No, I don't teach. I coach at the Royal Ballet Company. I coach principal dancers, and also I have my own company. The Adriatic Company, which we perform here in London in different sort of theatres. And my next show is on in May, but it hasn't sort of been advertised yet. It comes out in January, so I can't really say very much about it. But I'm reviving some of Kenneth Macmillan's works, which have not been seen for a long time.
When you are given sometimes with music, we see the notes. How does a choreographed ballet then spread over time? Are there all the notes of the movements?
Yes, you have Venice notation. So basically it's written like it actually looks like notes on paper, but it's written basically. You can actually study Benish notations, which teaches you how to write ballet. So you write each step and the movement, you know, kind of, it's actually rather beautiful to look at. It looks like a piano score, a musical score. But so basically through this Benish notation, the ballet kind of remains, so the choreography remains, but obviously the interpretation can slightly kind of change on depends on who's dancing it or who's putting it on stage.
We've appreciated the chance to chat with you today, talking about the book Ballet, the Definitive Illustrated Story. It's quite fascinating, not only through the history of the art, but culture, society, what was happening in the world that created, you know, the people that wanted to see this art and how it's lasted all these years. Viviana, we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Bye.